Bills make me wanna shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands.
Welcome back, Bills fans, to another exciting episode of Bills and Beers, Buffalo Bills podcast here from the Bills backers of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Lars. Joining me tonight, Cassie is here with us.
Sup?
To my immediate left, Billy the Kid Nichols here as well.
Sup?
And the president of the Chicago Bills backers, Sujeet, also with us.
I'm going to have something to say today.
So, Bills Nation at an all-time low. Hopes were high. Everybody was really excited about the new regime. But another season, another no playoff bid for these Buffalo Bills. Thanks for listening. We're forging ahead. Wherever you are, tell all your Bills friends about us. Billsandbeers.com is the best place to find us. Let's talk about that Tampa Bay debacle.
Let's go, Buffalo. Let's go, Buffalo. Let's go, Buffalo. Let's go, Buffalo.
The Bills make me wanna shout. Kick your heels up and shout.
Good news. After Sunday, everything that could have possibly gone wrong did go wrong, barring injuries. It was a terrible game. Our team did not bounce back from the Atlanta Falcons game. And we lost in what was a terrible, terrible football game for both teams on the road. Beautiful day in Tampa Bay while the rest of the NFL was enjoying a record-breaking touchdown Sunday. All 28 teams save the Buffalo Bills, scoring a touchdown record high, 90 touchdowns on the afternoon. Zero to our Buffalo Bills team. It could not have been a more fitting defeat.
Yeah, I mean, Sujeet and I were holding down the fort there at Lincoln Station, the Buffalo Bills backers, one of the Buffalo Bills backers bar here in Chicago. And with no resistance from either of us, it was approaching halftime, and we both looked at each other and were like, we're leaving at halftime, right? Like, and Sujeet's like, yeah. He's like, there's no way I'm wasting away my Sunday afternoon. Like, you know, I've got this going on. I'm like, yeah, you know, like, I'm not going to waste my afternoon either. I mean, because you know exactly what was going to happen that second half. And it's just, you know, why pour that emotion in? And it's frustrating to, because it has to be that bad in order to, like, I don't know. I guess I've felt this way, but it's just frustrating to go through again.
And this was the third time this year where it just seemed like all hope was lost. It was the first Jets game, that Steelers game, and then this game where the offense just could do nothing, and then the defense couldn't do enough to turn the tide. Defense actually did have a pretty good game, some pretty bad scores aside. But boy, EJ Manuel, he looks pretty good at times, but sometimes he makes quarterbacking in the NFL look damn near impossible.
You know, I mean, it wasn't just that one thing was wrong. It was that everything was wrong. There was just nothing to watch. I thought the Pittsburgh game, the Jets game, there were some moments that we'd like maybe get a drive going and maybe score a touchdown or, you know, at least culminate in field goals. And like we were getting by on field goals and that wasn't going to be good enough. But there was just nothing. And then when the defense, you know, normally our strong point, the defense just giving up these huge plays. And God, it's 2 weeks in a row where me and Bill were talking about the fact that there needs to be the safety coverage on our run defense is horrible. I know that, you know, we were trying to look at the film during the actual game. And I know that our safeties were drawing off to some of the receivers that were going the opposite direction of the play. But, I mean, the whole point of a safety, right, is that that doesn't happen. So there's got to be one person that's way back there.
The safety mechanism.
Right. It is the safety. Right. But it's just it was all bad. And, we'll get into this a little bit later when we talk about our Jenny Creamell player. But EJ Manuel, like you said, like, you know, when we say he's played well, you know, even when he's played well, it hasn't been like, wow, lights out. You know, like, I'm not seeing, like we saw in the Monday night game yesterday when another backup quarterback, granted a veteran, just lit up the field. Like, it wasn't like that. And it even wasn't like when Geno Smith has played well. It wasn't like that. Now, granted, I don't think, besides yesterday's game, he's never reached the lows that Geno Smith has reached. But he's just been like, eh. You know, he's been like, okay, yeah, good enough. Or, yeah, you know, he threw for 200 yards. Throwing for 200 yards is not a big deal anymore in the NFL. So there was just nothing to watch. And, you know, I got kids, okay? I was not going to waste any more time there.
Cass, we know you were suffering pretty bad on Sunday, too. We'll start with you. I totally forgot that we even talk about players of the game. Should we start with the hard, harder part of this game? Because we're going to have a lot more to talk about in the Genesee Cream Ale portion. So why don't you kind of tug us kicking and screaming back into a little more positive conversation here and name for us the Labatt Blue MVP of Sunday's game.
Wow. Well, this is a hard one.
Yeah.
And
good luck.
I'm going to take it a little bit away from what's normal. And I will say the Labatt Blue element of the game was being in Miami in that weather. I mean, you looked across the field or across all the other games. Yeah. Or sorry, Tampa.
Right.
Ugh. Not Miami. But you look across all the other games and you've got, you know, snow, wind, freezing, frigid temperatures, cold, you know, all this stuff. And we had just, you know, a nice, sunny, balmy 85 degree day in Florida. So way to go, Florida weather.
I'm actually going to kind of piggyback and give mine to an unconventional one as well. I'm giving mine to Mike Glennon because he did everything in his power to help the Buffalo Bills win that game. Unfortunately, the Buffalo Bills didn't really help him out. And I just want to say again for the record, I texted it to you guys. I hate Mike Glennon. I have no reason why other than the fact that I hate his face. I don't know what it is. He looks like an overgrown 12-year-old to me. And I just I hate him. I hate Mike Glennon. I hope that we get to play against him a lot. I was really hoping that Jairus Byrd was going to break his 7-foot leg in half on that horrible penalty call, which helped him get a touchdown. But I hate Mike Glennon. But he was the best player on the Buffalo Bills team on Sunday.
Jairus Byrd got an interception, right?
Oh, come on. Yeah. That was going to be mine.
You know, here's the thing.
He also cost us a touchdown with that fucking penalty.
So
we didn't see that.
You know, I compare... when you want to say Stevie Johnson and Jairus Byrd are the yin and yang for, you know, players that are clutch, right? And it's not a matter of necessarily talent. It's a matter of, well, I don't know. I think there's something to be said for, like, some players just have that, like, whatever you want to say, the cliche of it, that it factor, right? They find a way to make plays, and they continue to make plays throughout their career. And Stevie Johnson, on the other hand, finds a way to lose.
Well, we've got plenty to talk about, Steve. We're just going to jump in here. We're going to completely forego the Jacksonville section of today's game.
Yeah, fuck Jacksonville.
And we got nothing to look forward to.
We got really nothing to look forward to. At best, we swap draft positions with them, go from 8th to 6th, because that's where they draft, that's where we draft, with the same record as of today, Tuesday. But there's a lot to talk about as far as the state of this franchise goes, and a lot of it has to do with Stevie Johnson. So I don't mean to table what you have to say right now, but we got plenty to talk about when it comes to Stevie Johnson. Coming up later.
Madness.
Well, I mean, we might as well just start this conversation right now because I think we get rid of Stevie Johnson.
All right,
100%.
Good. All right, I can't wait to hear you substantiate that claim.
I'm gonna go. You know, I know that they gave up some big runs, but I really felt like that was the job of our interior linebackers. I thought interior defensive line. I think that after those big runs, they did a decent job sopping up the run. You know, if nothing else, they also seemed like after the game, Kyle Williams seemed like the only person that was adequately pissed off at the state of the franchise. So, actually, you know what? I'm not going to even give the whole line. I'm going to give it to Kyle Williams.
So you should have a conversation with yourself right now.
I've lost my mind, okay? I wanted to get Jay Cutty last night, okay? I'm gonna give it to Kyle Williams just for how angry he was after the game and in the next few interviews.
Well, I'm gonna also put a stipulation out here for the Genesee Cream Ale Bummer of the Week and say, because he's going to be a hot topic of conversation later in this episode, I'm taking Stevie Johnson off the table. Instead, I am giving it to EJ Manuel. There were a lot of miscues on offense. There was a WGR All-22 analysis that was out today that showed two just completely broken plays where players just didn't know what was going on. You had the line, the running backs, the quarterback, and the wide receiver each running different plays at least twice in that game. And I think that comes down to EJ Manuel. He's not communicating clearly enough. He's not calling the audibles, the line, fast enough, and it's just... He's got to get better. Straight up, he's got to get better. Suge, like you said, he hasn't been great this season. He's been bad this season. For the most part, he's been good, but good quarterbacks don't cut it in the NFL. He's only a rookie with 9 starts, so we're not going to lynch him just yet.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Can't use words.
As that word was coming out of my mouth, his race
became apparent. Marshawn Lynch.
No, we're probably not going to trade him.
Yeah, we're probably not going to get a third round pick for him, that's for sure.
But either way, the offense has got to clean it up.
So, I'm going to give this one. Can I do EJ as well?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, I'm right back there on EJ. No, actually, I'm going with CJ Spiller. If he cannot run the routes, he needs to speak up to Hackett. You know, and you know, the Marone meets with the captains apparently every week. And CJ's just got to turn to Fred Jackson and be like, I can't be put in those positions. I'm not going to be effective in those positions. I was effective when we were running in space. And if Hackett wants to run a tight formation all the time, I shouldn't be the one carrying the ball. If he cares about the team rather than his own production, and in fact, forget that. His own production would improve if he didn't get put in those positions. He is just ineffective running from a bunched-up formation, and he needs to recognize that and move on and demand that he be put out in the flat to catch passes or something like that. But, I just need to, for one bit, touch on EJ Manuel. You know, like I said, we were watching the Monday night game yesterday, and watching Josh McCown, and granted, he had like a lights-out game yesterday. He played ridiculous. But he is a veteran, so he's seen a million different schemes, a million different systems. But it wasn't just, you know, when EJ Manuel, what Josh McCown was doing yesterday was not just, oh, yeah, when he threw a deep ball, it actually got to the receiver, you know, in stride, or it was a very catchable deep ball. It's not just that. It's that, you know, he wasn't just throwing the ball in the general vicinity of the receiver. He was placing the ball in a place where only that receiver could catch it. Anyone that did watch that Monday night game, the crazy pass to Alshon Jeffrey at the end of the second half, or even some of these tall receivers that he has, and he puts it up not just above the receiver, but above and on the opposite side of the defensive back. It's that type of placement that makes a great quarterback. Now, granted, Josh McCown's not going to do that every time, but when I've seen EJ play well, all he's doing is actually getting the ball to the receiver. It's not expertly placed in a particular window. So that's, you know, when people talk about, you know, you want to see that quarterback develop, I was hoping that I would at least see a few of those where he puts the ball where only his receiver can get it. And, you know, let alone leading your receiver properly or not throwing, you know, 10 feet above your receiver. I mean, gosh, there was times where I felt like Ryan Fitzpatrick's pass were more accurate. But anyways, I'm just disappointed in general.
So you mentioned some good points on like Josh McCown, and just watching that game is just frustrating, especially being here in Chicago and knowing that there are Bears fans out there celebrating. The thing is, you know, Josh McCown, he hasn't done that his entire career. So you can't. It's very hard to argue that he's more talented than, like, he has more ability than EJ Manuel.
Yeah,
And he said, actually, in his press conference that what's different this year is that he said he's finally in a system that fits him perfectly, and it's the best system that's ever fit him of all the ones that he's been in. So, I mean, that's part of it.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to get. I was going to say that he's got receivers that EJ Manuel doesn't have, but I think more importantly, maybe not more importantly, just as important is the system, and that ties into my Genesee Cream Ale bummer of the week, which is Nathaniel Hackett.
Oh, boy.
And I could call him out every single week.
No way.
I'm a big. Not once, Lars, this year have we had any sort of rhythm on offense. Now there's definitely accountability. Sorry to use that word because that's what everyone's saying in the press is stupid. There's definitely blame to be had for the play. Blame falls on the players for not executing. However, you find just like, you know, Chan Gailey was working with less talent, and he found a way to do bubble screens that set up, you know, certain types of runs that allowed the offense to develop some rhythm and mesh with each other and allow their talents to come out. And I just don't think, while Nathaniel Hackett maybe is on paper calling the right plays, I don't think he's calling plays appropriate for the personnel that he has. And it's just a first man on the job. Hopefully it's something that he can get the hang of over the years. But I'd split ties with him. He'd be the first one.
I fervently disagree with that. And I say that because why? Because I was very slow to be on or against Ryan Fitzpatrick, because with Ryan Fitzpatrick we had a guy who, like we saw last night with Josh McCown, and who we've never seen with EJ Manuel. EJ Manuel constantly looks like he's a half second behind. That it's taking him. That it's like it's like herky jerky out there. He's not in rhythm. What we had in Ryan Fitzpatrick is a guy who just rocked and fired. He just threw ropes and lasers all over the field because he knew exactly where he was going to go with it, and he threw it with confidence, and he threw his players open. We don't see that from EJ. That's why I'm actually confident that can be learned, that you don't often see that from rookie quarterbacks, and that EJ will someday learn it. But that right there, Bill, I think is the rhythm that our offense is in, and I think it starts with our quarterback, who is a half second late on all of his reads.
But if it starts with a quarterback, I mean, if you looked at the beginning of the season, you would have thought that we were going to be so heavy on the rush game and be able to really set the pace by running the ball. And never ever does it seem like we're dictating the game by running.
Well, yeah, and I agree. I totally agree. If you're watching the game, every Bills fan would say that. But people who don't watch the games and just look at the stat sheet, see that we're top 3 in the NFL in run attempts and top 4 in the NFL in rushing yards. So clearly we're doing something with our running game, and how they're able to accomplish either of those things with all the 3 and outs that we have, I don't know. I don't know where they're getting these yards and all these attempts from. I really don't. Because when you think back at our games, the Atlanta game, the drive before the game tying drive, I turned to you and said, they're going 3 and out here. I just knew it. I knew they're going 3 and out because they go 3 and out at the worst possible times. There's no rhythm. I totally agree. And I don't know where it comes from. If it can't be coming from a running game if they're putting up those numbers. Again, as a Bills fan who watches the game, I agree with you. I would not describe our run game as good, yet we're somehow pulling these numbers out of nowhere. And Cass, we'll get to you in a second, I promise.
I'm here today. Don't worry. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, so here's the thing about Hackett that I don't like. You know, we were talking about rhythm. Rhythm is not just born on the actual football field during the game. Rhythm is born during practice. And your offensive coordinator, the job is more than just calling plays on game day. Their job is also having them ready during the course of a week of practice, Wednesday on. And, you know, if... You should see that, oh yeah, my quarterback is a few seconds late on all of his reads. So why is it that we're 3 games from the end of the season and now we're talking about we need to dial back the playbook a little bit for EJ? You know, if it's not working, if you're a good offensive coordinator, you go to your coach and you say, hey, look, these plays aren't working, EJ's not ready yet. We need to have some more mindless plays that just involve quick passes, 3-step drops, just like Ryan Fitzpatrick had. You know, it was just a matter of, I don't have to think, I'm just going to look, and if that person's open, then I just throw it to them. It needs to not be, oh, are you open? Oh, let me get to my 3rd and 4th read. Good quarterbacks can do that. Young, inexperienced, and maybe not so great quarterbacks can't. So that's what my biggest problem with Nathaniel Hackett is. And then, yeah, you're right. We've gotten a bunch of running yards, but there has been a lot of long runs. Not, you know, the we're going to average 4 or 5 yards a carry. And a lot of the 100-yard games we had were when Freddie was getting a running game going. But, you know, I feel like they've made a commitment to running CJ as their primary back, which I agree with in terms of building the future of the franchise. But if they're going to do that, that offensive coordinator needs to recognize the fact that CJ cannot run from a tight formation. And if he can't, week after week after week, you just need to start opening up those formations. And I honestly feel like Nathaniel Hackett doesn't feel comfortable enough with a bunch of different formations. There's a reason why we're only running from 1 or 2, and the only difference is whether we're in the shotgun or not. And I think that's because Nathaniel Hackett's playbook itself is not that diverse, not that, you know, it certainly doesn't look like Chan Gailey's playbook, let's say that.
Well, I will also let me just add to this, based on what you said, putting this in context for last week, this is all being exacerbated by the fact that we just watched a terrible game from our offense, and I maintain that no amount of game planning, Bill Walsh on his best Sunday would not have been able to scheme the players we put on the field on Sunday because they were not mentally cued in. And I think everything we're talking about, rhythm, execution, all comes back to the fact that they just went into a shell after that Atlanta game, and they were just a team out there who was playing for nothing. So I agree with what you're saying. I don't think that any amount of anything could have saved them this past Sunday, which is what we're all forming this opinion on, was this terrible performance. Cass.
But it's also the culmination of this whole season, right? Like, the frustration that we saw on the field on Sunday is the culmination of seasons long of frustrations of things not working. And when things not working, you gotta change. There's just been no change. That's the thing that frustrates. There's been no change.
I feel something worse. Yeah, but I hear you. But at the same time, EJ got injured, okay? Before that, he had one lousy game against the Jets. Okay, he came back. It was lousy against Pittsburgh in his first game back. Then he put up good games against New York, and he had a good game against Atlanta. The whole offense had a good game against Atlanta. The defense just didn't. So now we're back to talking about this Tampa Bay game where we've already established the game was there for the taking. We just couldn't get our players in the right place at the right time to make it happen. Cass, over to you now. Do you have a Labatt Blue MVP of Sunday's game?
Well, I already gave my Labatt MVP.
Right. How about Jenny Creamale?
Yeah. I can do Jenny Creamale. My loser, and I think based on what you were saying, be mentally prepared, is my boy. The guy that, you know, I think is a captain and is always very mentally prepared. And he showed at the game that he wasn't even there. I mean, your center, you know, having false starts. That holding penalty on CJ, or back in the back, or whatever, holding whatever that was on the CJ long play that wasn't even needed. That guy wasn't even come close to tackling him. So, Eric Wood, yep. Horrible, horrible game. And if your captain and your, yeah, if your captain and your center isn't there showing up, it's going to reflect on everybody.
Well, a lot of this factors in beautifully to what we're going to spend the entire, quote, Jacksonville segment talking about. So I want to get into the state of the franchise. Let's try not to ever think about this Tampa Bay Buccaneers game again, and let's hope to God this until we get to predictions, this is all I'm going to say about it, that we get the win this Sunday in Jacksonville.
I'm not trying to claim things I haven't earned, honest man. Snick Rick and Outkast is on this jam, but keep diamond on the 2-2 grand, trying to help raise our youth to me.
So a couple of important things to touch on here with this Bills team moving forward. It's becoming more and more apparent where our positions of need are, and there are positions we've been talking about for a long time. So we'll get into that. But what I also want to talk about is how between the end of 2012 and the beginning of 2013, we turned over literally 50% of our roster. We gutted it. We brought in new guys. We're still making practice squad moves every day. We're recording this on Tuesday, unfortunately. Chris Brown had mentioned on WGR that he expects a big roster move to happen this week.
Stevie.
Yeah.
Was it the one that...
Randy Kaufman being side of the practice squad? That person, and Meeks being taken off IR? Right. Probably not.
Chris Brown doesn't make that big of an announcement, so...
So, with things being obviously not finished, far from it, and given Doug Marrone's reputation from his days in Syracuse, wherein he turned over a lot of that roster, they had a lot of guys after his first year transfer because they didn't like playing for him. They wanted to go elsewhere. I think we are now in full-on rebuilding mode. Cass, you and I talked about it last week with the cutting of Tashard Choice, the elevating of Ronnie Wingo. We signed Tony Moliaki, which is actually very exciting. We signed him last week, and I read that. I was like, why do I recognize that name? And, oh, yeah, it's because 2 years ago he was one of the best tight ends in the league. He just hasn't been able to stay uninjured. You're looking at me as if you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. The Chiefs guy, yeah, Tony Moliaki. Moliaki.
Yeah. I didn't know who that was.
He's a smaller, athletic tight end, which, again, we can probably name tight end for the seventh, eighth year in a row now as a, quote, position of need moving into the offseason. But given all those things, given where we know we are at with this team and what we've come to understand about some of the personalities on this team, Stevie obviously being the most glaring example, what do we foresee from this team moving forward? Who's staying? Who's going? Where would you like to see changes made? Cass, you didn't get to say much last time, so we'll start with you.
Oh, goodness. On offense, obviously wide receiver. I still think we need a big wide receiver or that tight end wide receiver position that Jimmy Graham, you know, both, Gronkowski position. On defense.
Whoa. That's it for offense? You're forgetting there's non-skill players on offense, too. I'm talking about the offensive line.
Oh, you know, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not like, we usually do pretty well in the draft there.
Okay.
I'm not like emergency, you know, need that. And I'm sorry. I'm never very confident of drafting those players really that high.
Okay.
In my opinion. It's a free agent signing. It's like, you know, that's in my opinion. We didn't sign what's his name? Peters when he was a left tackle, and we did fine after that.
You realize though that of our five offensive linemen right now, the two best that we have, and probably the only two who I'd say jobs are safe are the two that we've drafted.
Yes, correct. But were they first round draft picks? Second round draft picks?
One was a first, one was a second.
What was the first?
Anyways,
I mean, I'm not too worried about the offensive line. I think that it's in a good shape. I mean, if we really were worried, then we would have signed kept what's his name, went to Tennessee.
Levitre.
So we would have kept him.
Okay. What about defense? Defense side of the ball. And by the way, we have yet on this podcast to address the Jarris Byrd situation. And if we're talking about the state of the franchise and how this team is going to change moving forward, we have to mention it in this segment.
Yes, correct. I would agree. Pay him, and then I feel like we need linebackers.
Yep.
We're not very strong there. Kiko's a good build, but
Kiko and Manny Lawson, it's a very steep fall off after those two.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that helps
side outside linebacker.
Bradham.
Oh yeah.
And I think then that helps out the line, that helps out, you know, cornerbacks, that helps out safeties. I mean, I just think our linebackers need to be, and we need more. We need depth. We need more. We need depth. We need, you know, better quality. So there you go. But hold on. One other thing.
Yeah, please.
I know that this sucks, and I know that everybody's worried, and I know that in our career of all of us being together, it's been a rebuilding decade. Correct. I mean, Suge, I think we started in 2003 watching games together. I mean, it's been rebuilding.
This is season 5 of Bills and Beers, which means we have close to 70 or 80 episodes on record. And I guarantee you, if you listen to an episode from the first 4 weeks of any given year of Bills and Beers, we're pretty much convinced we're going to be in the playoffs. And you listen to an episode from one of the last 4 weeks, it sounds just like this one.
Correct. So we've been here. I'm not worried. If, you know, we're going to rebuild this year.
Okay.
We got a rookie quarterback. I'm not freaking out yet. He's not having the year of luck or what's his name, RG3, but their sophomore years have been slumps. So maybe he has a down freshman year and his sophomore year comes out pretty hot. There you go.
I can dig that. Bill, you've been pretty outspoken about the Stevie Johnson situation. You're saying pay Jarris Byrd. I want you to address both of those situations. And I want you to speculate as to who you think is the first cancer that Doug Marrone cuts from this locker room, if it's not Stevie Johnson.
Why can I not choose Stevie Johnson?
That's the obvious choice.
All right. So cut Stevie. Pay Jarris Byrd. You pay people who are productive. And that guy, Jarris Byrd, just come out here and produced. And he's been he's out there like excited, getting people pumped up. I mean, listening to Stephon Gilmore's, like, and I feel like a lot of these mic'd ups, it's like, wow, this is depressing. I mean, they don't say anything.
I don't know.
Who doesn't play without saying any words?
That guy has had a microphone in his face since April 2012. Why did, and he said nothing. Like, he's a very quiet guy. Yeah. In fact, they've reported on how quiet he is. Why did they mic him up?
No idea.
Why didn't they listen to us and mic up Lee Smith?
Lee Smith, well, that'd be amazing.
So who else is a cancer? Who would be a cancer in the locker room? God, you know who I would actually think would be a cancer is CJ Spiller.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he's just a Debbie Downer, like, he's
not used to not dominating.
Right.
Yeah. He's not taking it well.
And shit, I mean, the guy, he'll probably go somewhere else and be super productive. And we obviously saw glimpses of him with the little screens with Chan Gailey, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think those things are – you have to have so many other things going for you if you're going to be – if that's going to be sustainable. And clearly, he just has one breakout run or one almost breakout run a game, and everything else is just
feast or mediocre. And
he comes up limping, yeah.
All the time.
But you're saying cutting Stevie Johnson's a foregone conclusion. There's no question in your mind that should be done.
It should be done. Yes.
Why?
Because one, he's not producing to the level that he should be producing if we're calling him a number one receiver. If he's not being thrown to like a number one receiver, he's gonna get pissed off and act up and be an actual locker room cancer.
We don't know.
And
he's never not been the number one receiver. How do we know that?
Yeah,
when T.O. was there, he wasn't.
I think he's an I kind of guy, and that's not a Doug Marrone type of guy. And it just doesn't seem like. I mean, you look at from like a high level view, you look at like the team, and he just sort of pops out. Someone just doesn't feel like he belongs.
I totally agree. And can you think of people? I mean, I was getting into this, and I have been for months now, since before this season started with Stevie Johnson. And people like to compare him to Randy Moss or T.O. or Michael Irvin and these guys who made a big show of themselves. But then I think, okay, fine. Those guys were very, you know, charismatic or flamboyant with the media. They're also Hall of Fame wide receivers. Yeah. Like, those guys had the physicality and the stats and the wins and everything else to back it up. Stevie Johnson's got nothing. And everybody keeps saying, well, watch him go to another team and be a winner. I can't.
Fine, go.
I'd love to see that happen because I've never seen a winning wide receiver behave the way he behaves. And I honestly can't sit here and people draw those analogies to those receivers I just mentioned. And I don't see it because those guys are so much better than Stevie Johnson. I can't think of a single professional athlete who conducts himself, who thinks as highly of himself as Stevie does with not as much to back it up than Stevie does.
Yeah, I mean, he's all we've had to hold on to for so long. So it's, again, like one of those scenarios. It was just like Mormon, right? I mean, we were like, oh, what, man, like Mormon's a good punter. And you have this sort of emotional attachment to a guy because you've been cheering for him for so long because you don't have anything else to cheer for. But Marrone doesn't get emotionally attached to people, which is the one saving grace I feel like with Nathaniel Hackett is I think he would get rid of Hackett if he thought it was really the right thing to do.
I do agree with you there, and I will say two side notes. As loquacious and as clearly how
is that a black woman's name?
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
As much as Marrone clearly loves to talk to the media, he just loves having a microphone in his face. As much as he loves that, he does strike me as a no bullshit guy. And with Stevie, it's nothing but bullshit. I know you got counter arguments coming out the yin yang by now, but a quick tangent. Mormon's dive, his soccer esque riling on the field after he took a lick in his leg on Sunday was embarrassing. It was everything. Dude, he was hamming it up until it was clear that they were going to get the penalty. And then he got up and trotted off the field.
Good!
No, not good. That's why everybody in this country rightly hammers on soccer. There are a lot of things that are great about soccer. That's the one thing that does.
Soccer all the time?
I just said there are a lot of things that are great about soccer. That is the one thing that I can't stand and people in this country can't stand. And that was the quintessence of hamming it up, trying to act like you're hurt for the no other reason than to get a call.
Man, I have so many different.
Brian Mormon has been at the very tip top of my shit list now since October 2012. So old, actually, since before then, I've been saying since we changed our uniforms. So before 2010, that we should cut him because he's the face of this losing franchise, like it or not. Suge, you like to ironically wear your Mormon jersey. Too many people wear that Mormon jersey. And if I'm Doug Marrone, I'm a no bullshit guy who wants to cut ties with everything that in any way, shape, or form resembles losing, I get rid of Brian Mormon first because he's been a cancer in this franchise forever. And that dive, he took on Sunday. Yeah, you heard me. Yeah, I hate that guy. He's such a putz. Going over to you, Suj. We've talked about a lot of things. Can we not talk about Brian Mormon? I want you to address. Okay,
no,
okay. You have 30 seconds to address all the shit that I just talked on Brian Mormon, and then after that, please go to the more pressing things, which was left guard, linebacker, cornerback, wide receiver, and yes, Stevie Johnson.
Okay. So now we know who you want to replace. But here's the thing: the Mormon jersey that I bought was bought when everyone else on that team sucked. And the only reason we were kept in games was because he was punting the ball 70 frickin' yards and would keep us in a field and we would maintain the field position. We would even out our field position. Now I agree. Now Mormon's gotten old. I think that when we got rid of Mormon, you know, it was sad because I thought he was a great Bill. He was great for the Buffalo community. He was always a team player. You never heard him complain about anything. But he was, you know, while he was with the Bills, at least during his initial tenure, you know, yeah, he left when his game started to slip. And we saw that with all the other places he went. He wasn't that great of a punter.
Okay, your 30 seconds on Mormon's up.
Okay, so.
By the way, he's gone. You can pick your bottom dollar. There will be.
Yeah, he should be gone. He should be gone. I mean, he's old. He's not. He was. It was like we got no other punters available. Let's just bring him back.
We'll probably draft a punter.
Right, which is fine. But you do realize that the punter that we drafted or the punter that we had before Mormon was horrible. Horrible.
Well,
okay, this young hot punter sucked. So you know, Brian Mormon. You know, has not been an elite punter for many, many years, but he had, you know, he certainly didn't have zero hang time so that two punts came back during the Cleveland game. So, anyways, okay, so moving on past that. And I agree that probably Mormon's gone, that's fine.
No.
So,
moving on past.
Stevie Johnson.
Go
okay.
On. Yes.
No. So, y'all agree, and you guys are all full of shit. And let me tell you why. Because if Stevie Johnson leaves his team and T.J. Graham stays on it, you have all lost your mind. So let me explain one thing. So I agree that Stevie Johnson is not a wide receiver, number one wide receiver. Anyone that compares him to Randy Moss or any of these other
right.
Either way, any comparison between those Hall of Fame wide receivers and Stevie Johnson is stupid. Now, keep in mind that he's also the only other wide receiver besides Andre Reed who's gotten 3,000 yard receptions or 3,000 yard seasons. Sorry, yeah, he's the only one. Right now, granted, it was a different league back then, but whatever. So he is producing something, okay? There are a lot of third down conversions that are executed by Stevie Johnson. Does he make boneheaded, huge play mistakes? Absolutely. But who else is making the third down conversions? Why isn't Robert Woods doing it? Robert Woods has been silent. Even those games when Stevie was out, what was Robert Woods doing? He had, what, maybe 2-3 catches? It was Marquise on deep routes, who I love Marquise. And it was T.J. Graham occasionally showing up. But until we replace Stevie Johnson, you don't get rid of Stevie Johnson. That's my biggest thing, is that we don't have anyone to replace Stevie Johnson. If we go out and draft or get in free agency one of these big-bodied, true number one wide receiver wide receivers, then by all means, yeah, fine, get rid of Stevie Johnson. But you can't keep T.J. Graham on the team and get rid of Stevie Johnson. He is far more productive. I don't care what he does on the field, off the field. I don't care what he says in press conferences. He is far more productive than any other wide receiver on our roster right now. You don't get rid of the people that are less – you don't keep the people who are less productive and get rid of the people who are more productive. So you better have an answer of who you're going to replace Stevie Johnson with before you get rid of him.
Thanks, Sujit, for joining Bills and Beers. The door's that way.
Okay, that's fine. He's been productive. To what end?
What's it gotten us?
It's to what end?
Say that about every single player on the Buffalo Bills. Every good player. Marcel Darius. Yeah, he's been productive. What has that gotten us in terms of our production as a team?
Yeah, but Marcel Darius isn't responsible for crucial plays at crucial times and screwing those up. Dropping balls, getting balls intercepted, not going up for stuff. Like, is quitting on plays. I mean, yeah, but...
Yes, but he's also responsible for a large number of our third down conversions with quick slant routes. Who else has run a well-executed quick slant route on our team?
Who else is getting paid as much as he is?
So, absolutely, he's getting paid as the number one wide receiver because he is the number one wide receiver on that team. He's the most productive wide receiver on the team. I don't think that he is an NFL-caliber number one wide receiver, but we need that before we replace him.
We can bring back Roscoe Parrish. He did that slant route extremely well. Boom,
no,
there.
Didn't. Roscoe Parrish never ran an effective slant route. He was never an effective slot receiver. Why? Stevie Johnson is probably his most effective.
Roscoe was like... he was great in the slot, and then all of a sudden he had to move out of the slot and be a regular receiver because someone got injured.
So Roscoe, when he tried to run a slant route, would get bumped by a linebacker and would fall on his ass. So Roscoe was never an effective slot receiver.
So likewise, we did bring up from the practice squad today Brandon Kaufman. We're talking about replacing wide receivers that now I'll just go out and throw it. I love that guy's game. I loved watching him in the preseason. He's a big guy, 6'5", he's white, so he's probably not that fast, but he catches everything that's thrown his way. He was going over the middle nicely. And to your point, Suge, fine. Stevie Johnson's a productive receiver. What he brings to the table, not that hard to replace. You can't say that...
Yeah, 8 to 12 yard, you know, gains three times a game.
Yeah. Come on, man. The guy... You don't accumulate 1,000 yards in a season with getting 8 to 12 yard passes three times a game. You get those. And that's the thing. I agree with you that they are 8 to 12 yard receptions. They're not deep, long receptions. So he's not getting the majority of his yardage with long passes.
Well,
you know, the way that Marquise Goodwin has the luxury of doing. He's getting his yardage with grinded out yardage.
Yeah, but he also probably gets the yards and then he fumbles the ball at the end of that play. So he gets those.
This is going to be a moot point because Stevie Johnson, whether it's the next three games or if we bring him back next season or if it's in the offseason, he's going to get injured because he doesn't work out hard because he's a lazy son of a bitch.
Right, but that's the reason why this is the first season in his entire career that he's missed a game, right? So clearly his offseason conditioning results in him missing games because he's the first season in his entire career that he's missed a game is this year.
You're cherry-picking that stat because while he may not have missed games, he definitely came out of games and was nursing injuries a lot throughout most of his career.
So was C.J. Spiller. C.J. Spiller's done that.
No one's. I'm not
so
arguing.
Fred Jackson. So has Eric Woodhead.
Whoa. Come on.
Fred Jackson missed half of a season due to an injury, and the gross majority of this season he has been injured.
A legit injury, not a hampering injury.
Fred Jackson.
A groin injury for a wide receiver, not a continuing hampering
injury. No, I get that. I'm not going to try to qualify the injury here, but it's a groin injury. It's a non-contact injury. Fred Jackson was sitting out games because he had guys sandwiching his knee between their helmets. That guy was just getting blown up.
Eric Wood, who had a broken leg.
Yeah, you could say the same about Eric Wood. Yeah, and Eric Wood had guys falling into him. Stevie was getting hurt with nobody touching him.
Right, but Stevie Johnson's entire game is quick cuts, right? And if you have a groin injury, if you have an Achilles injury, or if you have a hamstring injury, those quick cuts don't exist.
Yeah, but if he's taking on those injuries on non-contact plays because he's not well conditioned, then he's taking himself out of his own game by your definition.
Well, okay, so be that as it may, maybe if he's playing injured, I don't see a player playing injured and producing while he's playing injured as a bad thing. Like I said, those three seasons when he made 1,000 yards, if he was playing injured, then more power to him. That's very impressive that he was able to get 1,000 yards three seasons in a row while playing injured.
Okay, all right. You're not wrong with your productivity argument. However, Stevie's own quote was, after he completely biffed the pass that was intercepted, he said that was early in the game and those plays don't matter.
Yeah, that was real dumb. I mean, Stevie Johnson is not a good man in front of a microphone.
If you were to take your definition of productivity and his definition of when it matters, then none of his productivity matters. Because when it does matter, he disappears.
I don't care what Stevie Johnson thinks matters, to be honest with you. I don't care about anything that comes out of Stevie Johnson's mouth. Like, I actually thought the whole marker thing with his kid, you know, writing Happy New Year's, I thought it was hilarious and I thought it was great. I thought it's a stupid rule that you should get penalized for, and I understood why he had to come out of the game because that's Changeli said he was going to do that. But But I don't care about that. I care about us having a receiver when Ryan Fitzpatrick was here that he could go to and most of the time rely on to get a third down conversion. Now, granted, I totally agree.
That somewhere else.
Where? Who has been that?
But that's in the past. But that's
nobody.
Like. But
nobody's
I.
Nobody's
yeah.
That.
But that's
we've been going towards Stevie every time. We're not replacing it.
No,
now
we
is the time
drafted,
to say.
We've drafted TJ. We've drafted TJ Graham. We've drafted Roscoe Parrish. We've
but those
drafted
were replacements
Robert Woods.
For
no, Roscoe Parrish was on the roster way before Stevie Johnson.
Well, right, and Roscoe Parrish was supposed to be a slot receiver, right? And how effective was he in the slot? He wasn't.
But those
weren't Stevie Johnson
replacements.
Okay, well, that's fine. We drafted that idiot, that tall guy.
Hardy.
Yeah. You know, so we have not had a wide receiver that can replace Stevie Johnson. That's the sad state of the Bills draft board.
It's not a matter of needing someone there to replace him. It's a matter of when he's there, the other players aren't able to step up and emerge. But you saw what happened when he was injured and didn't play, is we had some of our most productive games of the year.
Right. We had a productive game.
Look at the top 50 wide receivers in the NFL by production, a.k.a. stats. Stevie Johnson's nowhere close to that.
Absolutely, because he's not a number one wide receiver.
Dude,
there's
wide receiver is the new running back of being able to
get these players with you.
Tall and
so
athletic.
Put someone on the roster that can prove to us that he can be as productive as Stevie Johnson. Robert Woods, when Stevie Johnson was gone, was not very productive. Marquise Goodwin was, and that's great. Maybe Marquise has, but Marquise by his very, you know, the very nature of his game is never going to be a number one wide receiver. He's going to be a deep threat.
Jordy Nelson.
Right?
But when Stevie
Vincent
was,
Jackson.
When Stevie was
Victor
out,
Cruz.
So was our starting
those are all people who come up big.
So,
they make the the sideline catches.
Put one of those players on our team. Absolutely.
But dude, you got to understand though that what you're describing is a guy on the PGA Tour who leads the tour every year in yards off the tee, but is last on the tour every year in putts per hole, and therefore is somewhere in the middle of the pack and is kind of a forgettable player. That's what we have in Stevie Johnson, and where everybody – now, you can't see this at home. Cassie, Bill, and I are sitting on a couch. You're sitting by yourself on an ottoman. It's very fitting given this conversation. But what everybody over here is arguing is – who cares? Get rid of him. We're not gonna lose anything by getting rid of him. We're really not.
Who's gonna fill that production, though?
Okay, he hasn't been productive for shit this year. He was very productive under Chan Gailey and Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
And I've been saying for a long time that he was productive as a seventh round pick because he was in a perfect storm with his freestyle, with Chan Gailey's offense, and with the way Ryan Fitzpatrick made decisions.
He's the most productive wide receiver this year.
On the Bills?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure that's true,
yeah,
to be totally honest.
He's got like 572 yards. It's horrible, but
yeah.
No one
Then great, he's King Turd. Okay, I mean,
I agree, but you gotta put you. Okay, so then you're just making two holes. That's the problem.
Is there a hole, though? That's what I'm saying.
A huge hole.
It's a very shallow hole. That's what I'm saying.
Like she said.
If he goes to this number two wide receiver, he thinks he's a number one wide receiver.
Yeah.
You try to put him as a number two wide receiver, it's going to create a lot more issues. We're going to get a lot more attitude.
Then cut him. You're going to gain a couple million dollars.
Dude, the only type of franchise that will pick Stevie Johnson up, that will pay him that money, is a franchise like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Cleveland Browns, which are synonymous with losing organizations just like the Buffalo Bills.
He needs to be a number three wide. In an ideal situation, he would be a number three wide receiver that just was able to get open on third down and he could make those conversions. Okay, he's not expected on to make the big touchdown catch, to make the big deep throw. That's where I see Stevie Johnson as a useful member of a team. Now, I agree with you guys that his function is replaceable. But the Bills have not, in the past 7 years that he's been a member of the Buffalo Bills, I think, have not been able to replace that. That's the problem. Okay? It's just somebody.
All right. Stevie Johnson is actually number one in receiving yards, 593.
Thank you.
Right behind him,
Scott Chandler,
515 yards.
Yep.
So Stevie Johnson is outproducing Scott Chandler by – 78 yards. Oh, and they also tied in fumbles that lose the game for you.
Yeah, no. Okay, look at
I understand, but we started this segment
with who needs to, what needs to be replaced, and so let me get into that. My number one thing that needs to be replaced is a big-bodied wide receiver, and not or, but and a big-bodied pass-catching tight end. Those are the number. Those are the two things that I think
Moliaki will fill that role.
So I didn't know who Tony Moliaki was. I heard that and I was thinking Christian Okoye and I got confused. And then I started doing the hula dance because it was Moliaki. But
I'm putting the lid on this. I think we also need a guard. I think we need at least two offensive linemen. I think we need.
Let me give you my list of people.
That was I'm cutting this. I'm getting the last word on the Stevie Johnson thing. We got to move on to predictions and wild card. So I'm putting the lid on this whole segment. Stevie Johnson, fine. I totally agree. In fact, I said as much in writing on a message board. That Stevie Johnson needs to go to a place where he's not the focal point, where his head and his antics can't get in the way of things, and where he's not expected to be a leader.
Right.
He's not that in Buffalo, and. To be honest, you say, like, then let's replace that first. He can't be that in Buffalo with the amount of money we're paying him. So unless he sits down with Buffalo and agrees to accept one-fifth of the amount of money he's making right now, there's no other sensible solution than to cut the guy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
okay, fair. Great. Moving on.
Let's cut him.
Well, we're finally getting now to this. By the way, been a very, very long episode.
He's only making $1 million.
We're now to the final portion of the episode, which means we are at the wild card portion of our episode.
Wild card!
And as we're talking about roster moves and where this roster stands today and how they came to be and who brought them here and what's going on moving forward, we can't help but wonder what it is that Buddy Nix is doing these days. So while I take care of my dog, Cass, I'm going to pass the mic over to you. What is Buddy Nix doing these days?
So you guys all know Buddy the Elf.
Yeah.
You know, I think Buddy Nix is just hanging out with him, being jolly and eating syrup and spaghetti together. I think that would be, you know, a really good place for him. Now, maybe he's, like, hanging out by Ralph's deathbed. I don't know.
Well, you gotta give some answer, Cass. You can't just say, I don't know.
I don't.
He's eating spaghetti and syrup.
He's eating spaghetti and syrup with Buddy the Elf.
Okay.
It's Christmas time.
I mean, I think he's probably not watched one NFL game this entire year.
Yeah.
He's sitting on a porch somewhere down south drinking Kool-Aid.
Yep.
His own Kool-Aid, probably. Like, doesn't... I don't think... is following anything in the world.
No. That's what I'm thinking, too.
Is it Dave Wanda?
But he's definitely the man I would want making all of my decisions for.
Taking naps to start free agency. Yeah. But how old is he, like 79 now?
Like, what is he doing?
Buddy Nix right now is in Texas. He is a part-time owner of a barbecue joint and a partial owner of a car dealership. Now, what he's doing right now, though, is he is currently on a clear liquid diet because he is actually scheduled for his second colonoscopy tomorrow morning that my friend Emra Terrer down at the University of Texas, UT Southwestern, will be performing, and he will call me and tell me about it.
Very, very interesting things raised there. So I'm going to combine. I was going to say he definitely owns a chain of used car dealerships. You know, but Buddy's Reliable Auto. But Bill, I was with you because I picture him somewhere in a picturesque mountain setting, in a cabin, completely removed from the world of football, completely removed from current events. Taking no less than a dozen pills a day for whatever afflictions befall an 80-year-old man. Having his wife wait on him hand and foot because, let's face it, he made a lot of money in his career.
How is this different than with the Buffalo Bills? Not knowing anything and taking a bunch of pills.
I know.
Oh, wait.
He's napping.
Wait.
Buddy Nix is definitely getting an Asian massage right now. He's going to definitely do the frip over.
But I also see him as Suge, you know, used cars. I see him being an entrepreneur of some kind. If it's not used cars, then it's like
working with Ludicky on
jerky? Jerky or like a tilapia farm, or he's, you know, he's kind of like a go kart rehab or something like that.
He's got a
skeet shooting
farm,
yeah, or like, you know, he opened up a corn maze or something. You know, he's doing something to make a little coin on the side, something which requires him to completely unnecessarily drive his pickup down a long dusty road to go check on things once a day, and everyone's like, oh, here comes Buddy. And he just kind of lingers around and tells awkward sexual jokes that make all the young people feel really, really out of place. I guess...
Strippers 2x2.
Yeah, strippers 2x2.
Strippers 2x2.
Well, Cass is on Instagram, and I don't know what Bill's reading about, so I've lost the members of the Bills and Beers crew pontificating on what I think Buddy Nick's is doing. We're approaching an hour-long episode here, so why don't we just wrap things up and go into predictions. If you're still with us, thank you so much. Cass, coming over to you. We're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know if you heard. Do you have a prediction for Sunday's game?
We lose the next three games, and then at least the season's over.
Okay. I'm going to go Jacksonville 13, Buffalo 7.
We're going to play really well next this next game. It's going to piss me off because then everyone's going to be like, oh, everything's fine. We don't need to do anything. Look how good EJ is. You dolts.
Good word.
So we are going to go Buffalo 28. Defense wakes up. So Jacksonville 6.
I will say that we're shaping up right now for a 6-10 season wherein we're going to be 6-9. We're going to win these next two games. It's going to be a glimmer of hope. Then the Patriots are just going to crush us.
Yes. Why?
And we're going to forget all about. I hear you, Cass, but I mean, we know how it's going to shape up, right? I mean, that's. I haven't had my premonition yet.
It would be far too perfect for us to lose out and get the good draft pick.
Yeah. They'll do something to screw that up.
Us by winning some games just to screw our draft
pick. It's a new regime. New regime. We're going to get beaten this game. 27 to.
Jacksonville!
27-20. I think we put up a couple decent plays. There'll be a little bit of positivity, more positivity this time around, but it's going to be sort of like, well, that's about what I expected.
I guess one thing we can expect, and again, it's only Tuesday, unfortunately. Supposedly there's a big roster move coming. Who knows if the rumors are true. But I think the next three games are going to be preseason and the end of the season. So I think we're actually going to have some players out there playing for their respective careers. So I don't know really what to expect, given I don't know who's going to be taking the field for this Buffalo Bills team. I think there's going to be a lot of numbers out there that we don't recognize. But so it goes in week 15 when you're a Buffalo Bills fan. If you've made it through this marathon episode, thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like we've been saying, we have about 200 subscribers. We're so very grateful for your listenership. And we'll be back next week to talk about the Miami Dolphins. But until then, we've got the Jacksonville Jaguars on the road. Playoff implications have all but died. But we'll be cheering on these Buffalo Bills. So go Bills.
Hey, 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 let's go Buffalo. Buffalo. Let's go, Buffalo. The Bills make me wanna shout.